This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. Hey folks, it's Jake Miller from The Drive, and Manscaped is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped's Performance Package, the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code 20DRIVE. That's 20DRIVE at manscaped.com. And if my math is correct, that's about 8 million balls.
It's time for The Drive's Top 4 at 4.
Hour number two of The Drive underway. The Top 4 at 4 brought to you this afternoon by Bo Kregner and the Kregner Group. They do real estate the right way. Here's Jake Miller.
Thank you, Russell. Up first, we think Tennessee will play Vanderbilt tonight. Game is currently scheduled for 9 o'clock after being pushed back. Hopefully we don't hear that whistler. That's the only reason I don't want to play this game. It's so hard to watch. You can't listen to the radio broadcast. You just sit there on mute.
Well, Kentucky is up 1-0 on LSU in a single elimination game right now, and looks like they're going to finish that one. They're in the eighth inning there, but it does look like maybe a little more rain in the forecast down there in Hoover, so we'll see what happens. It might be a late night. I mean, they didn't start the Ole Miss-Vandy game last night till like 11, and, I mean, that thing was done well after midnight, so... I mean, they will.
Yeah, it was like 2:30, I think, when it ended.
Yeah, we need to keep an eye on the Twitter sphere for any potential announcements, because it could get. They might move some stuff around.
That they might. Number two, the top international basketball prospect, Henry Vassar, has committed to Arizona. The 7'18" is identified as probably the most promising European prospect committing to the college route in the class of 2022.
Interesting.
We need a 7-footer.
Yeah, it would be nice. I mean, I guess that's the dude from Gonzaga. And so, I mean, they're obviously recruiting international prospects. They had a couple on their team this past year. And Rick Barnes has been known to pluck into the international ranks as well. But I guess that guy's going to be a Wildcat.
Guess so. And number three, Chris Bryant's back has landed him back on the Colorado Rockies injured reserve list. He's now on the 10-day IL list because of a lower back strain after returning from just missing 21 games because of back pain. Signed a 7-year, $182 million free agent deal in March. Colorado Rockies are not getting the return on investment here.
Oh. That's got to be tough because you know he feels that pressure, right? He signed that big deal. They're paying him all that money, and he's probably rushing back in the first place to get back out there and ends up aggravating a back injury, and now he's back on the shelf for a long time.
That he is. Number four, Nebraska will suspend its tradition of releasing red balloons after the first touchdown of home games due to a global helium shortage that's been caused by the conflict in Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah, there's a helium shortage.
A helium shortage?
Yeah. I mean, supplies on that are always tight.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like these companies and these industries are just using it as an excuse to jack up their prices?
Do I think that...
price gouging happens price in times gouging of war? Yes, Jake. I think that's going to be a...
Commodities that are traded worldwide, yeah.
I'm saying, what if there is actually no shortage?
So, I was not a good student to begin with. I will not profess to be a smart guy, but by far, like the one subject that I just did not compute with me at all was chemistry, right? I mean, like my eyes just glaze over. I just don't understand it. I don't get it.
Yeah.
And so let me ask a very stupid question here. I thought helium was like a naturally occurring element in the world, right? I thought it is,
but apparently,
you get what I'm saying, Russell.
Where does helium come from? Is what I'm asking.
Apparently it comes from Russia and the Ukraine. Who knows?
It comes from Russia.
I guess so.
I mean, you talk about the...
it's a non-renewable it's a non-renewable resource, and yeah, we're running out of it.
Running out of helium? So helium could be gone forever one day?
Yeah, most of the helium comes from natural gas deposits. Despite being the commonest element in the universe, helium is actually quite rare on the Earth. On Earth. Helium is generated deep underground through the natural radioactive decay of elements such as uranium and thorium.
Wait a minute. So when I'm breathing that stuff in.
Once you mention like more than one of the elements from the periodic table of whatever, like that, that's where you lose me. I'm just like, boring.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mr. White. Sorry, Heisenberg. Just never did it for me.
But
talk
about
the butterfly effect, man. Putin invades the Ukraine, and all of a sudden, no more balloons at Nebraska football games.
Yeah, and we're going to be missing out on a lot of fertilizer and wheat as well, which we'll have, you know, guarantee you'll notice that shortage more than the helium, probably.
Well, I'd say that. I will say this. Being able to let go of balloons, probably the least of Nebraska football's problems at this point, if you've been following their program the past couple of years. I mean, will they even score touchdowns to release the balloons? We used to do that here. I mean, I remember going to games in the 80s, and they would release balloons at Neyland Stadium, and I guess somebody made a big deal about, like, the birds getting a hold, like, I don't know, something about the environment. Yeah, and
because the balloons kept ending up in the river and the lakes in East Tennessee, and it's not really good for birds and fish.
We had a tradition in high school, and we all ended up getting banned from doing it forever. We used to get these 10-gallon jugs, put gravel in them to make, like, homemade artificial noisemakers. But the dust from the gravel would come out of the top, and that'd be our way of just creating some sort of smoke. Well, some lady complained about it, some Karen. She's like, I'm going to have an asthma attack. I'm going to have an asthma attack. We couldn't have fun after that.
Sorry they wouldn't let you play with your rocks up there in the holler, Miller.
That's what I grew up with, man.
I'm pretty anti-balloon release.
High school football experience for you.
It may come as a shock to you, Russ.
You hate balloons.
No more Luft balloons.
Do you just say you hate balloons?
No, I said I'm anti-massive balloon releases.
I think he just said I hate balloons.
No, that's not what I said.
Well, what is your position on balloons, Bear?
I mean,
just in general.
In general, I don't really have much use for them. And in this situation, like those mass balloon releases, you look up, they are not good for the environment at all.
Have you ever seen the one?
The mass one? It was either Cincinnati or Cleveland.
Cleveland?
Yeah.
Yeah, the great Cleveland balloon disaster of like 1986. Go look it up on YouTube if you want to see something absolutely hysterical.
Yeah. Unfortunately, our friends in the fish and bird family that we share the earth with didn't find it as hysterical. It fouled up all the waterways.
Could you imagine a young bear?
Okay, Mr. Science, Mr. Wizard, we get it. You care about the environment more than us.
Well, I mean, it's just how big of a slack jaw you got to be to get your rocks off on just everybody releasing a balloon. It's the dumbest thing ever.
Man, it looks cool when balloons fly up in the air.
Yeah, look at it.
Imagine a young bear just losing a balloon.
Exactly right. That's a. I mean, you don't like fireworks? You don't like...
I didn't say that.
...lasers and stuff? I mean, it's the same concept. Things look neat.
I just thought it's just not my thing.
Yeah, they call it the Cleveland balloon disaster of 1986. There's a whole like video about it on YouTube that you can watch for free. It's absolutely hysterical. All right, thank you, Jake. That is the top four at four, brought to you by Bo Kregner and the Kregner Group. They do real estate the right way. They're online at BoKnowsHouses.com. You contact him to find out more. Call them anytime at 865-742-1035. Today would be a great day to go out and do a little house hunting as the market continues to explode. Demand is high, supply is low. That means if you're a home seller, well, you're going to be cashing in big time when you sell your home. Got to know how much to list it for, though. That's where Bo comes in. Get it listed, get it sold, and move on to your new home. Bo Kregner and the Kregner Group, 865-742-1035, online at BoKnowsHouses.com. Russell Bear, Jake with you. Marcus Young hanging out again as well. Wednesday afternoon edition of The Drive. We are breaking things down for you this afternoon. SEC scheduling debate. And I'm a little bit surprised on Twitter right now. Most people are going with the 3-6, but here's you tell me if my assumption here is wrong. Oh, Bear, we've got breaking news here.
Okay.
We got breaking news. Take me to the breaking news desk as quickly as possible, if you can, please. The Tennessee Vanderbilt baseball game will not be played tonight.
Whoa.
When are they going to play it?
They don't know. According to Tennessee Vol Baseball on Twitter, Tennessee Vandy game will not be played tonight. We will provide more details when we have them.
That definitely helps Vanderbilt. But, I mean, what are you going to do? It's pouring down rain.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to have to change up the format, right? I mean, if we're going to lose most of today, we lost a game yesterday. We're losing multiple games today, it sounds like, and multiple games tomorrow. They're going to have to change the format. They're going to have to go to single elimination.
Yeah, they are. Let's see what it's doing down there right now. I think it's still raining.
I mean, you might have a situation where teams have to play twice in one day.
No, it's just cloudy right now. It's supposed to start raining again 5 p.m.
I mean, I don't know that it doesn't help us too, because it's just less games that have to be pitched.
True.
It's less strain on your bullpen. And I know there's some people are quaking in their boots. That could be an L. Vaughn in Birmingham says, if we go single elimination, just cancel it. They worked too hard to get shafted in the tournament as the number one seed, and the SEC should have stepped in on the whistler a long time ago.
That's a pretty good one. I'd be fine if they take it to single elimination, though.
Lars says it would be our darn luck for this thing to flip to single elimination, impending doom in the pit of my stomach. I'm just not that worried about
it,
man.
The region starts next weekend.
It would suck to lose, but I would be over it in about an hour, right?
Yeah.
I'd be over it very quickly.
Got word from someone that's in Birmingham. Says it's not even raining right now, and nothing above 50% the rest of the evening.
That's not what the National Weather Service is saying.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure if they can play, they're going to play. But the stuff I saw was looked pretty gnarly.
Yeah, and then starting at 11 o'clock tonight, it's not going to stop until – I mean, it's 90% chance showers again tomorrow. Then it's going to be beautiful. If the report's right, forecast, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, low 80s, sunny. Actually, Sunday it's supposed to be hot. So I don't see how they're going to have a choice for us. I really think we're going to be talking about breaking news going to single elimination.
Yeah, y'all keep an eye out for information there. We'll let you know as soon as we hear anything more. But, again, Tennessee baseball game will not happen today against Vanderbilt. Per Vol Twitter, Vol Baseball Twitter account just moments ago. All right, we've got our friend Josh Pate coming on the show here in just a couple of minutes. Lots of stuff to talk about SEC football. First of all, I want to get his thoughts on the Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban kerfluffle from last week. And second of all, and perhaps more importantly, with a 10,000-foot view here, what are we going to do in the SEC about football scheduling when we expand to 16 teams? Per multiple reports in the media this week, the two quote-unquote leaders in the clubhouse are a 1-7 format and a 3-6 format. The 1-7 format would be every team has one permanent opponent that they play every year in football, and then seven games that rotate. And that way you would play everybody in the league at least once every 2 or 3 years. The 3-6 format would be three permanent opponents and then six rotators. Obviously, you're looking at a 9-game schedule versus an 8-game schedule in the 1-7 format. Today's Record Ridge Barbecue Smoking Out question, which of those two options do you prefer? So far, 104 votes cast at Fox Sports Knox on Twitter. 60% of the audience says 3-6. 40% says 1-7. So, and I do think that there is some drive-by Twitter voting going on here. I feel like if I could talk to some of the people that are voting 3-6, I feel like it could convince, like, look, if you're Tennessee in the 1-7 model, your one opponent is very likely going to be Vanderbilt. In that scenario, you have the easiest path, by and large, in the conference for the foreseeable future under that model. I feel like if a lot of the people who are drive-by Twitter voters on this Bear were heard it that way, I feel like they would. I feel like those numbers would be reversed.
Probably. I didn't think like I, other than the number, the 11 number. Tom was basically, you know, making the same argument that I'd made a couple of times, that I would, just me personally, I would rather just move Alabama and Auburn over to the east, kick Missouri to the west, and roll with.
So you are open to his 11-game SEC conference schedule?
I mean, it wasn't a complete deal breaker. It's something to think about.
That's a terrible idea.
I mean, I'm fine with – listen, I mean, I was proposing a 13-game round robin. A couple weeks ago, but and that's for a 14-team league.
Yeah, I can go there with you.
But it just doesn't seem like. I mean, it seems like these are the two options right now. Oh yeah,
I'll agree with
seven,
you there.
And there's some pushback against going to a 9-game schedule. So anything above that to me is just la la land. But hey, everybody's entitled to their opinion. All right. Josh Pate has opinions. 247 Sports, host of The Late Kick. We will get his thoughts on all these pertinent issues and more when we continue. Stay tuned right here. We're listening to The Drive all together now. Fan Run Radio, back with more right after this. All right. Welcome back. The Drive continues. Fan Run Radio, 105.7 FM, 1340 AM. Streaming online at fanrunradio.com and your free Fan Run app. A variety of ways for you to experience the program. Russell Bear, Jake, cruising along with you. Wednesday afternoon edition of the show. Josh Pate has entered the chat. 247 Sports, host of The Late Kick. Good afternoon, Josh. How are you, sir?
I'm good, man. The rain stopped, and I'm just out in the middle of a wide-open field south of Nashville, you know, where everyone tends to call you from.
We never know where you're going to be joining us from. It's kind of a Where's Waldo type thing whenever Josh Pate comes on the show.
Yeah, there have been worse locations, I will grant you that. So this is an ideal day.
Yeah, no trains rolling through today, so we're off to a good start. Josh, wanted to get you on. Would have loved to have talked to you last week when the college football world went crazy, really, for the first time this offseason. And it was Jimbo Fisher in one corner, Nick Saban in the other corner. The gloves came off. Words were said. Everybody had an opinion. Now that we're a week or so removed from the kerfluffle and all the jaws hitting the floor, what are your takeaways from what we saw, what we heard from the SEC, the statement from Greg Sankey, and just where we're at in that whole situation moving forward?
Well, what's funny about it is if you would have been just totally out of the country, let's say, and you had no access to any technology, and you got back home today, and someone described to you what happened, you would think they were overhyping it. You would think what you just said, the words that just came out of your mouth, were overhyping it. But then if you went back and looked at what happened, this is one of the situations where the description really does match the reality. I don't remember seeing anything like that. So moving forward, the bigger takeaway, even at the time, to me, the bigger takeaway was they kind of agreed on the main point, which was, you know, the whole antitrust needing the federal government, which is a place no one wants to be in life. And so I've done a lot of talking, a lot of digging with some people that kind of have to make these decisions over the last week since that happened. And there were really two main takeaways I had. The first was that whole thing that unfolded got everyone's attention, and for better or for worse, and for better could be that you get some actionable change that, you know, cleans up a lot of the mess we have right now. But the second point was, yes, while we, and by we, I mean they, while we as a college football power broker structure would love the federal government to grant us antitrust protection, we don't think we're going to get that. So that's our Hail Mary. That's our plan A. But if that doesn't work out, whether it's the SEC signing this new contract that'll go into effect in 2024 with ESPN, or whether it's the Big Ten signing their deal, which is going to happen pretty much any second now, member institutions in those two conferences are going to be raking in $100 million-plus per year. I said that right. $100 million-plus per year, just because of the sticker they have on their helmet, just because of the conference they play in. So the big question is, how do we curtail the NIL mess right now? Well, the most logical solution I heard, and I'm on board with this actually, is you negate the NIL mess by essentially buying your own players NIL. And you don't do it officially, but unofficially what you do is you enter into revenue sharing agreements from a media rights deal perspective with all of your student athletes on the football side, your revenue generating athletes. And what you do is you set up a structure where when you commit to Tennessee or you commit to Arkansas, whether you're a three-star or a five-star, you know there's a certain amount of money you are guaranteed, whether it's $35,000 or $50,000. I don't know what the number is, but make it enough to where I can no longer put a $15,000 carrot on the end of a stick in a kid's recruitment, and it's enough to sway him. And at that point, what you'll have in the NIL market is you will have still your Bryce Youngs of the world, your DJ Uiagalelis of the world will get above and beyond because they are superstars who would already warrant that in the NIL marketplace. Right now what you have is kids whose official value, if you will, is being artificially inflated simply due to recruiting inducement. And so that's where I think we're probably going to head. Does it totally clean it up? No. Does it answer the question for the Pac-12 or the ACC or the Big 12? No, it doesn't. But I think at this point, a couple of those conferences, the SEC and the Big Ten, are about to take the lead on this.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and I heard you make this point on your podcast last week, Josh, which is for all the animosity that we saw from those two last week, and obviously it's personal. At the end of the day, they both essentially said the same thing, which is, hey, you know, we just want we just want to know what the rules are. We want it plain as day so that we're all on the same page here. And I think that echoes a lot of the frustration of everybody, you know, fans included. And Tennessee fans have probably benefited the most from the NIL thing so far. When you look at Nico, we call him Nico Iama Pajama over here in East Tennessee. They've probably benefited the most, but still, I think even Tennessee fans want to know, all right, man, like, let's just have, I don't want to use the word level playing field because it's college football. There is no such thing, but as close to a level playing field as you can possibly have in a sport that's inherently unlevel.
You want to be able to see the playing field. You don't want to exist in a foggy world, and that's what we're in right now. And the other thing is, if you have supreme confidence in who is leading your program, it's for the best if the playing field is unfoggy. It's the programs that have doubts about their overall direction that feel the need to have an edge here or an edge there that they otherwise couldn't have in a normal college football setting. So at Tennessee, if I believe in Josh Heupel, which I happen to, I don't think Tennessee athletics need that landscape to be as it is at the moment in order to succeed. Like, they got Nico, and you could say they got him because of NIL, but look, we could just as easily see them light up the scoreboard again this year and offensive talent look to Knoxville and say, wow. So that's kind of a premier program again. My granddad and dad used to tell me about it, but I've never seen that. Well, if they're back and they got 100,000 in their stadium and they got rich tradition and they got immaculate facilities and, oh, by the way, I can go there, put up big numbers and get developed. None of that screams NIL. That's just the way it's supposed to work.
Josh Pate, host of 24/7 Sports Late Kick Podcast, our guest here this afternoon on The Drive. And Josh, what do you make of this SEC playoff that was proposed? Pete Thamel wrote about this earlier in the week. Is this a real thing, or is this just Greg Sankey trying to leverage the rest of the sport to the playoff expansion that he was fighting for last year?
So I think it is real. Let me first say that. Yes, it's real. He is not posturing. Okay, his time for posturing came to an end when those folks walked away from that playoff expansion table. And I can tell you, if you ever hear Greg Sankey publicly act even mildly agitated, it means he is irate behind the scenes. So for him to just out front be as demonstrative as he's been lately with on-the-record quotation, including in that Thamel piece on ESPN, it says a lot to me. And if you've covered the league, if you've been around the league, and all of us on this call have, then you understand there are certain things that certain people say that you can take cues from. And when he says the kind of things that he said, I take a cue from it. And it is that he's not messing around. But that doesn't automatically mean we're about to have an all-SEC playoff. What I think is happening right now, and has been echoed to me by a few people, is no one really has a firm idea. The old metaphor of trying to nail Jell-O to the wall, that's kind of what this whole process has been like. And so I know it's frustrating when you ask people, hey, how's this going to turn out? And no one gives you a straight answer, including me. That's because there is no straight answer to give. I think that spring meeting period in Destin next week will go a long way at least towards figuring out who's in what corner in the room. You're talking about everything from figuring out a conference schedule to figuring out how much you want to go it alone. How much do you view partnership in college football as a lost cause? And at this point, you just look in the mirror and say, let's control what we can control and let these fools out here outside our window do whatever they want to. The point is that stuff's all on the table. It sounds like word salad, because it is. All that stuff's on the table, but he is not messing around when he makes those kind of, if you want to call them threats, they're threats, but I just think it's where his head's at right now. And his head wouldn't be there if a lot of the folks in this conference's head weren't in the same place.
When you talk about the scheduling issue, and it seems like they've kind of settled in on the 1-7 thing, one permanent opponent, seven rotators, eight-game conference schedule, and the 3-6 format, three permanent opponents, six rotators, nine-game conference schedule. Do you have a preference between those two choices? Do you think those are the two choices? Is there a dark horse candidate out there we should be keeping in mind? Or what would Commissioner Josh Pate like to see happen?
It does sound like those are the two. I personally don't have any reason to believe there's some mystery third format. I guess that could happen. But I don't have any informed knowledge on that particular aspect. When you look at the 1-7, one thing that stands out to me, obviously, is if you are, you know, a program that doesn't have multiple traditional rivals, it's not that big a deal. But if you are Alabama, for example, you get Auburn, but then you don't have Tennessee every year. I don't think anyone in Knoxville minds that all that much. But, you know, if you're a historical fan of the conference, I guess there's something you have to give up. But then again, when you look at the future of the sport, the SEC and beyond, I think the best case scenario at this point involves you having to give up a little bit of what you liked. We're just trying not to give up everything at this point. So I think that 1-7 probably works better for me, just because you get to rotate the opponents through. And I don't think a lot of us, even though we know Texas and OU are coming, have really gotten comfortable with a 16-team format yet. We're still thinking in terms of 14, but that is a lot of teams. And unless you have one of those formats where you do not have a lot of permanently fixed games on your schedule, it takes a while to work through that.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like the 3-6 thing makes a lot of sense to me, especially if you want to go to a 9-game conference schedule. But, man, it's going to be – somebody is going to be feeling screwed, right, if you get to that. I mean, there's going to be some teams that just coming out of there say, wait a minute, you know, how did they get Vanderbilt and Kentucky in theirs, and we've got LSU and Georgia in ours?
Yeah, and the other thing about that is, keep in mind now, we have never had to think about this in the conference because we've never gone to it, but once you go to that 9-game conference format, you are playing 4 and 5 every year. So half the teams in the league are going to play more road games than they are home games, and you also have this other thing to keep in mind. However this playoff structure works out, let's just say we don't have an all-SEC playoff, and the college football playoff is whatever it's going to be, 4, 12, whatever. You also got to keep in mind the reason this conference hasn't expanded in the past is because there was a lot of reluctance within the SEC to believe that the college football playoff committee would accurately view the strength of schedule in the SEC, i.e., we're already playing 8 in the toughest conference in America. We don't really care that the Pac-12 plays 9 or 10 or whatever it is, because the fact of the matter is 8 down here is tougher than 9 or 10 out there. And if they expand the field, I don't think it's as big a deal, but while you're still at 4, it is a very big deal.
Yeah, and just real quick here, from a Tennessee perspective, Josh, I think it was – well, actually, it might have been the Dellinger piece. I don't know. There's so much written about this, said about this. I get it mixed up. But they were discussing the two halves, right, the hierarchies of the conference, and you've got, 8 good teams and 8, we'll say, not-so-good teams. And Tennessee was listed – it was in the Dellinger piece – Tennessee was listed as one of the not-so-good teams. And, Tennessee perspective, that's a bitter pill to swallow. But then you think, first of all, it's probably true. Second of all, this could actually benefit Tennessee, because they would conceivably, if you go to the 3 permanent opponents, they would be one of the teams getting the 2, quote-unquote, not-so-good opponents, and then one of the good opponents in their permanent thing. The 1-7 thing might work out best of all for the Volunteers, Josh, because – Tennessee probably has legitimately the best argument to have Vanderbilt as their one permanent opponent in that situation, right?
Now that you mentioned that, I had not thought about this. Now that you mention it, there are multiple ways this could work out very well for you guys. Because when you talk, I don't believe in that whole top tier bottom. I start other sentences before I finish them. So I don't believe in that whole top bottom tier thing, because you're never going to sell me that someone is permanently second class in a conference where you're about to cash $100 million paychecks every year. So if you invest properly, spend properly, and develop properly, anybody can elevate within reason, and that includes Tennessee. But if that's the way it's going to be, then yeah, this could actually work out very well.
Oh, I mean, I'm looking at, Auburn and Alabama. In the 1-7, Auburn gets Alabama, right? Florida gets Georgia. Probably. So, I mean, you're Tennessee, those are the big three, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, every single year. And that's probably gone. I mean, I guess you could make an argument for Kentucky or South Carolina or maybe even Florida, but it seems to me that could work out very well for Josh Heupel if these are, in fact, the options.
Yeah, the only other thing I could think of is, who would you pair Vanderbilt with if it wasn't Tennessee?
Yeah.
Would it be like somebody random like Missouri? I don't know. So, yeah, I think there's a solid argument there.
All right, Josh, always appreciate your time, my friend. Go check out The Late Kick. He is Josh Pate, 247sports.com. Josh, always appreciate it. Thanks for jumping on.
All right, brother, appreciate it.
Yep, Josh Pate making his presence felt this afternoon on The Drive. I'm telling you, this could work out very well for Josh Heupel.
Indeed it could.
This program deserves a break, quite frankly, Bear.
Yes, it does.
They've put through the ringer. You know, when Danny White goes in front of his peers next week in Destin,
mm-hmm.
I'm picturing a very – you remember the episode of Seinfeld where George is trying to get the apartment?
Yes.
and they're going to give it to like the Korean War veteran, the old guy who's like in a concentration camp or something, and he's
prisoner of war. Yeah,
survived. He survived a shipwreck or something like that. It and George goes in and tells him the trials of Costanza.
He ended up getting it, didn't he?
Yeah, Danny White could very well have a great pitch for the trials of Tennessee. I mean, just think about it. I mean, we have survived many hardships.
We Kiffin, saw Dooley, Pruitt, and Jones.
Yeah. Lane Kiffin burned the program to the ground, left us on probation. Dayrick Dooley presided over one of the worst defenses in the history of college football. Complete embarrassment. Botch Jones was even worse than Dooley. And then to top it all off, we turned our program over to a borderline illiterate gump who didn't know how to wear a face mask.
Covered everything but his mouth and his nose.
And if not for the timely demise of the NCAA, we would probably be facing as close to the death penalty as you can get without actually getting the SMU treatment.
Yeah.
Right now.
It's something else, man.
We've lost to Vandy like 5 times. Kentucky kicked our teeth in our own stadium 2 years ago. I mean, we've been through some stuff. We deserve this. We deserve having Vanderbilt as our permanent opponent. Doesn't guarantee anything. Just have to go win the other 7 games. But damn it, Bear, we deserve a break. You know?
Yeah. I got over that whole Alabama, you know, the old Alabama rivalry thing a long time ago. I used to be hardcore about that. Wanted to play Alabama every year.
It took a while. I think it was watching Derek Dooley kick a field goal at the end of the fourth quarter to make it 56-3 to, like, avoid a shutout at home field. I think it was at that point where I was like, you know what? I don't need this.
Yeah.
We don't need this. This is not good for anybody. It's not good for Alabama. It's not good for anyone.
No, I distinctly remember that. Yeah, that's what I asked. I distinctly remember, I think I even said it when they kicked that field, I was like, what are we doing? What are we doing?
All right. I got one more segment with you. Then we got to go take care of something. Family, settle off family business. Stay with us. You want to speak? Now's a great time to jump on board. 865-546-8200. 546-8200. The drive continues. It's Fan Run Radio. The astonishing tales of Costanza.
What a great show.
He was a survivor of the Edmund Fitzgerald, according to Brian on Twitter. That's true. The guy he beat out. Who wrote the song? Was that a Gordon Lightfoot song or something, Bear?
Yeah, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. I know it's a great song, but that's way down on my list of Lightfoot songs. That'll shock a lot of people.
Everybody is shocked to learn that that is not at the top of your favorite Gordon Lightfoot song list, Bear. That's the only Gordon Lightfoot song I
really
can name you.
What about Sundown?
Yeah. I don't know. How does it go? Can you sing a few bars?
Not really. Sundown, you better take care if I find you've been messing around my back door. That one.
Boy, you're really selling it.
Anyhow, I watched his documentary recently and found out just something really strange at the end of it. I wish you could remember the song. I know you've heard it. The woman that song's written about was the lady that shot John Belushi up with the speedball that killed him.
What?
Yeah. It was Lightfoot's ex-girlfriend. It's crazy.
It's a shame. Let's go to the phones. 865-546-8200. If you want to jump in, the festivities continue on Fan Run Radio. John is next. Good afternoon, John.
Hey, Russell, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Hey, we got you, man. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I heard your thing right before the commercial break. I wanted to give you some verifiable stuff. That was the worst coach in 100 years. There's some guy in the 40s who had a winning percentage, but is a better winning percentage than Dooley had. And the guy before that was a 1910. So Dooley was the worst coach in 100 years. Then we gave it to Butch Jones, who had the worst season in Tennessee football history with 8 losses. We were like one of 2 teams that had not ever had a season of 8 losses before. And now we're not. And then we gave it to Pruitt, who had the worst loss in Tennessee football history, you know, according to Georgia Southern.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. It's not preferential treatment, John. We've earned this, right? We have earned this break.
We have definitely earned this. We've definitely earned this. To go from the worst coach in 100 years to the worst coach, you know, worst coach season ever in our history to the worst loss in our history. It's just 1, 2, and 3. I did want to throw those out for you so you can use them at your leisure if you'd like, and you do not have to credit me at all.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
See ya.
I mean, next week, I hope Danny Banner Dan is ready to go to bat for Tennessee, right? I mean, this is a big moment. When we vote on this, I'm just picturing, I mean, picture the room. Let me paint the picture for you here for a second. Like, all these ADs and coaches are in there. After Jimbo and Nick take off the gloves and settle their little lover's quarrel, once that, and we start debating on these schedules, and people are going to, Nick Saban's going to piss and moan about, oh, well, we don't deserve to play LSU and A&M is 2 of our 3, and we don't have, you know, Auburn, that's too hard a road if that's the 1-7 schedule and all this. They're going to go around the room. Everybody's going to make their pitch, right, why they should have the easiest schedule. I just picture the lights dim. Danny White, Banner Dan, steps to the center of the room and says, gentlemen, I'd like to tell you a story. I'd like to regale all of you the trials of Tennessee, the trials and tribulations of the University of Tennessee. And then you just go through everything that's happened the last 15 years. Like, if they wrote a book, they did write a book about it. And Mark Nagy wrote the book. You wouldn't believe it's true, Bear. Like, Josh Pate did his, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You woke up from a coma. If you woke up from a coma, you've been in a coma since the year 2000. You wouldn't believe, like, what? There was a fan-led coup to overturn a head coaching hire? Like, we were literally on the steps of the building?
Yeah. And that we took part in. I mean, honestly, if we're honest with ourselves. Like some kind of third world country. You know, we're directing people on the radio.
But it ended up being the best thing ever.
Defaulted to a banana republic?
Yeah, that's basically what it was with, you know, our junta directing the mob.
And we lost to Georgia State, and we had a coach who couldn't speak English, and we had a coach who was talking about shower discipline, and like, what?
We had one had probably the most adversarial relationship with the local Knoxville press of anybody I've ever seen in my life. He's keeping a list in his back pocket.
Botch?
Yeah, it was Botch.
Oh.
I've got a list. I could never do his voice.
But
with his girdle and his size 4 Stride,
like,
right.
By the time Danny White gets through regaling everybody with the tales and tribulations of Tennessee athletics the last 15 years, there won't be a dry eye in the house. They'll have to let us play Vanderbilt, Kentucky, and Missouri every year.
Yeah, I mean, he's going there like Robert Johnson with the guitar and just sit down and wail. The blues that our program's been suffering under. Our fan base. Wow, you want to know why we act crazy on social media? Because we're tormented. Our buddy Jeff told everybody it's a government experience to see how far they can push a fan base until we all snapped. And they found out.
Well, I'm all in on the 1-7 model. Give me Vanderbilt as our permanent opponent. Let's rotate seven. Let's have an agreement not to play any more FCS opponents, period. Make those four non-conference games count. They've got to be against teams that we've heard of. They should all be losable games. I say losable, I mean, you know.
Well, sure. I want to get us back to where we're playing like our, you know.
You're talking about like UCLA, Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Those games that we used to play quite a bit.
Hey, even Memphis, SMU, Wake, you know, stuff like that. Games that people actually tune in to watch.
Yeah, I mean, Wake, we played – I remember when I was, you know, a kid, Wake coming in. I mean, we beat the dog snot out of them, but Wake came in here.
Games where we're not going to have double-digit betting lines.
Yeah. Power five.
Miami. I love that series in the early 2000s.
Well, yeah, I mean, but we've gotten away from it.
Yeah.
Let's work at a call from Roger, and then we got a split, or I got a split. Jake and Bear will take you through the rest of the 5 o'clock hour. What's up, Raj?
What's up, Russell? I'm doing good. How you got, Darren?
Doing well, Raj. Thank you.
Well, good. Russell, I just want to answer your question. I might be crazy, but I want to flee the game, not the one game. And the reason why I want to flee. Play game, because Russell, if you want to, I want to play game because you can have off, you can still play, but I'm saying it'd be easy for you. I'm saying it, but it'd probably be easy for you with Warren, but that's what I asked you to bear with this. And if you with Warren, I'm going to play, but since you went with Warren, I mean, what you, I don't know, I'll probably eat your kids, but wouldn't you miss playing all the other teams though if you went with Warren though? You know what I'm saying? I mean, would you miss playing them though if you didn't? And I know it's probably easier to play that way, but you miss them. I would say you miss them. When you miss them, though?
Maybe a little bit, Raj, but I think we would adjust quickly because the 16-team league is just going to look so different with Oklahoma and Texas in it. And if you're rotating, if you do the 1-7 thing, you're playing seven rotators instead of six, and you're going to see more teams more often. So it's not. You're still going to see Alabama, Georgia, Florida. You're going to see those teams once, at least once every 3 years, probably every other year. So pretty much every other year you're going to see those teams. So I would, that would be my strong preference. Yeah, in a 1-7 model, you're going to see everybody every other year. So you're not going to go more than 2 years without seeing everybody in the conference. So I think that would be my strong preference as we sit here today.
Okay, Bear, would you miss if you played one game? If you played one, like Russell was saying, if you played one game, would you miss it? If you would you miss a game if you didn't play them?
I mean, part of me would, Raj, but you know we're gonna see them every other year. In a way, I don't like that we're gonna end up. Russell think I'm crazy, end up with Vanderbilt. Just my personal preference, I would rather have Ole Miss. That's not going to happen because their permanent opponent will obviously be Mississippi State. So, I mean, like I said, other than who our opponent is, I'm finding myself liking the 1-7 scheduling thing as well.
Yeah, I just want to – I don't have the six game. I might be crazy, but I don't have the six – the sixth game, Russell, until the warning. Now, I know it'd be probably easy, but I enjoy playing the 9 teams. So I was kind of flee, you know, the flee game, you know. Or the sixth game you're talking about, I think, right? The sixth game, I think, about choose that, you know. Am I crazy?
Raj, you're calling this show, so you got to be a little crazy. But that's okay. We love you because we're crazy. We're all stocked up here, right, Bear?
You got that right. You can go sell it somewhere else, Raj.
Hey, Raj, we got to run, man. Thanks for the phone call. All right, Bear, Jake, same thing, boys. Just make sure I have a job tomorrow at 3 p.m. That's the only goal here, all right?
Yeah.
All right.
Gotcha.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Marcus. We will do it again tomorrow, 3 to 6. Stay tuned right here. We got another hour of The Drive coming up next here on Fan Run Radio.